Now we come to the lecture of the 23rd of April, 1914. Dov Steiner starts by saying that I would like to conclude the series of this winter's lectures this evening by giving a consideration about the significance of the science of the spirit for human life. It was indeed during this series of lectures often pointed to the fact that spiritual science is not merely a theory about the world, which you either assume or you can reject this like you can other theories, but spiritual science hopes to be able to be a really new life element, something which can penetrate into the whole human being, into the whole configuration of the human being, into one might say, the cosmic soul mood of the whole human being, and that man, through such a permeation with spiritual science, can have from it a real Lebensgut, a good thing for life, a value for life. What in this connection has already been indicated in the corresponding places of the single lectures is not going to be summarized here, but will be illuminated in a much more amplified way. In the course of the lectures of this winter, it is indeed precisely pointed to the fact again and again how spiritual science is something which rests upon something different from every other investigation, every other research. Particularly every other research in our age. It was mentioned that in every other research, indeed, in the main, in every other activity of the human soul in life, the important thing is that the human being unfolds, develops his powers of judgment, his powers of will, insofar as they are in the state which they already are, and that he applies them directly as they are. If we confront life, so we are forced to appeal immediately and directly to our judgment in order to meet, in order to get some sort of decision or conclusion in this or that sense. And on the other hand, if we so confront life that our will is taken into demand, so we are able only to build to bring to application that strength of will which we have unfolded in the process of our normal education. In short, we are in every moment of ordinary life, but also this applies to ordinary science, in every moment of ordinary life and ordinary science, we are forced to take ourselves as we already are. Now, in contrast to all this, spiritual science is different. And precisely the fact that it is different in this connection does it create for itself opponents and people that reject it. A large number of people in our age reject it. The spiritual scientist cannot take himself as he is. It realizes that the soul must transform itself to another cognitive and will instrument than it is already. And that is the essential point. Hence also, that soul mood in which the spiritual scientist confronts knowledge, and of which I have already spoken in these lectures, that soul mood which expresses itself in the fact that he actually always has the feeling that what you otherwise directly has applied in order to have a judgment on things, now you must withdraw that from the external world in order to bring yourself forward. Now you must wait until your soul has become mature and ripened in order to permit to enter into you the cognition, the knowledge of the truth. So that which otherwise, as it were, from our soul streams towards the external world, that those activities, those forces, are in the first place applied to work upon your own human soul. Through that, however, man is brought into the mood of an activity, a mood of an inner activity, being active, not that mood of simply taking in the world, exposing yourself passively to the world and allowing things to come into you. But you have to make yourself active. And in this way, in the soul, there are called up in the soul what one might designate as the new forces of activity of the human soul. And then we have seen other things of which one can say that what has just been said can even be further enforced and conformed, that everything which in the first place stand in external sense perception, or to the thinking and forced along which is bound to the brain, all this which is at man's disposal can supply to spiritual science no powers of cognition. But the spiritual science must in the first place appeal to the enlivening of forces which otherwise remain sleeping in the soul. I've brought to your attention to the fact that the what one can call the real clairvoyant knowledge, that which is clairvoyant cognition in the true sense, that in every moment of the spiritual sciences, scientific researcher, as far as the processes and things which he wants to cognize, the spiritual scientific researcher, he must immerse himself in those things which he wants to cognize. That this, what he wants to perceive and know, as it were, extinguishes itself if he does not immerse himself in it with his whole soul activity. An external color or an external sound, one yields oneself passively to an external color or an external sound. It is they that work upon us. However, what we want to cognize in the spiritual world cannot be cognized in a passive way, but can only be cognized when you place your soul in activity. In the moment where we submit ourselves in a passive way to things to the things and objects of the spiritual world, then what you ought to really cognize transforms itself into hallucinations or into illusions. That's what happens if you present yourself to the spiritual world in a passive way. In no moment should the soul on the spiritual field be permitted to rest. If we keep these things in mind, that the soul, in order to reach the steps of spiritual knowledge, which I have presented in my book, Occult Science, and in my book, How One Can Acquire Knowledge of the Higher Worlds, as I've presented it as the stages of imaginative, inspired, and intuitive knowledge, you can rise up to them only insofar as you continuously unfold an inner activity. Then we shall see that the spiritual scientific research can only supply knowledge to the human being, which also makes necessary a special kind of understanding. I have repeatedly pointed to the fact that in order to understand what the spiritual researcher announces about the spiritual worlds, you yourself do not need to be a spiritual researcher. Although, in the books I've just mentioned, it is shown that in our time, every person can become a spiritual researcher to a certain degree, because there exists in every soul a direct, mysterious language or speech through which it can understand what the spiritual researcher says, even if you yourself are not able to undertake this spiritual scientific research. Just as you can understand a picture which a painter has painted, even though you yourself are not the painter. However, also to this understanding must the soul of the human being at the present time actually first penetrate into, because nothing is closer to the human being of the present time than to say, the truth must come into me. I must passively relate myself to it. It must be given to me. One feels oneself actually insecure if you have to do something, if you have to first transform the soul in order to recognize the truth. It's very easy to put the following objection to the spiritual researcher. You can say to the spiritual researcher, you present the concept of truth, which is not the same sort of concept of truth as the concepts of truth of external life or external science. And these concepts of truth of external life or science say to us, I believe that which is corroborated by the facts themselves, what I so to say permit to reveal through the facts themselves. Now, for many years I have confronted this kind of way of cognition and way of confronting life, and I've called it the fanaticism of facts. On the other side, there stands a certain dogmatism in which one devotes oneself to, a dogmatism of the facts, the Tatsachen, of the so-called facts, which signify for the soul the same thing, even though it may exist upon another field. This dogmatism of the facts, so-called facts, is just as much as any other kind of dogmatism. One feels, so to say, that one feels that one doesn't possess any inner force, no schwung or Tragkraft, no carrying force, in order to take hold of the truth, in order to permit the truth to be present in the soul, if one doesn't permit oneself to be led by the leading strings of the external facts. If you feel that you have no support, unless you're led by the leading strings of the facts as they are described by external science. Spiritual science, to be sure, makes it necessary, because she is speaking about things and processes which do not belong to the field of ordinary life. Hence, spiritual science makes it necessary, because it doesn't deal with ordinary things of ordinary life, that one penetrates, advances to an understanding which is not tied with an external ganglebender, an external string to external facts, and hence it cannot subject itself to a dogmatism of facts, but that it must feel itself being illuminated in an inner soul experience for the light of truth. An inward grasping of the living truth, that is something which modern science must first accustom itself to achieve. One can precisely say the modern soul is not capable of working itself up, arousing itself to develop those strong inner forces which are necessary in order not to be dictated by the truth, but to experience the truth directly. However, this feeling is necessary if the spiritual scientific results have to be tested and understood by human souls. One has to realize that there's nothing in the whole circumference of natural scientific or spiritual scientific cognition, knowledge, which does not stand in, there's nothing in the whole circle of natural scientific or historical scientific knowledge which doesn't stand in complete harmony with the knowledges of spiritual science. This has often been emphasized in these lectures. However, those who in the first place have accustomed themselves into natural scientific thinking or into the history scientific thinking, who have achieved the ordinary habits of thought, at the same time with these habits of thought they suck into themselves prejudices, and it is these prejudices which one must learn to be able to overcome. It's not out of the prejudices of science, but it's not out of the judgments of science, but out of the prejudices that emanate in association with science, that there grows the opposition against the science of the spirit. And if one remembers what has been said in the lectures which I've presented here, that spiritual science will, that through spiritual science, powers of cognition are created, which are not like a passive observation with the eyes, or a passive listening with the ears, but are like an inner gesture, like an inner listening with the soul physiognomy, which must become something of an active nature if the soul wants to penetrate into the spiritual world. So one will therefore understand that one can bring understanding to spiritual science if human souls will gradually accustom themselves to be able to fetch up out of the depths of the active soul forces, those forces which must be activated, animated in a free activity of the soul. However, the modern soul is only too much inclined to take things in very passively. But that which spiritual science requires and demands must be inwardly taken hold of. You must be participating with the feeling. You must be participating with thinking. You must be participating with your feeling. You must participate with your sensing. All this must happen if you follow the demands of spiritual science. And insofar as spiritual science appeals to something which is indeed present in every soul, but is just happened more often sleeping in the soul, so spiritual science calls into the out of the soul, forces out of the soul itself to be used for spiritual life. And when these are activated, then it represents a higher life value, a life value which more and more will be needed by the human souls. In addition to many of the other reasons which one can speak in order to promote the entry of spiritual science into present culture, above all, there is this reason valid, that the human soul, purely in order to orientate itself externally in life, will need to call on more of the stronger forces the more we live into the future. Life itself will demand from the human soul these stronger forces. I have often, in other connections, pointed to the fact of the nature of that rhythmical interchange which occurs in every human life in the course of 24 hours, namely, waking and sleeping. What about that, from the standpoint of spiritual science, is to be said, that has already been mentioned partly in different lectures. Today, as it were, I shall indicate only that the human being in the ordinary normal sleep, but aside of that which he can perceive for his direct soul mood, what he has of this sleep, this can, in this sleep, represent a very means of producing health. All this to say that sleep makes you healthy. Okay? You need only to hear what the external science says, so you will see that external science agrees that sleep is a correct, healthy means to have health, as a means of getting health. The best curative means for many an illness belongs to the establishing of healthy sleep. Now, in sleep, the soul is, as spiritual science shows, and has often been mentioned here, the soul has distanced itself out of the physical human body. The soul spiritual is in its own world, in the spiritual world. And this different kind of relationship of the soul to the body than it is in the case of the waking, that is connected with the calling up of healthy forces. The reason why healthy forces enter into sleep is because the soul has a different relationship to the body in sleep than it has in waking life. Now, the spiritual science calls forth, as you have seen, that you make the part of the exercises lead to the fact that you make the soul spiritual of man independent of the physical, because otherwise you can't investigate the soul spiritual. Everything which the spiritual scientific research is researched external to his physical body. When that which he has so researched, he brings that into concepts and words, and when the human soul really acquires an understanding for that which he has to say, then there is upon this soul, who itself is not spiritual researching, this soul who is only taking in the information which is given by the spiritual researcher, then even the person is just taking in an understanding way. This knowledge validates itself, makes a special influence upon the human soul. This soul will inwardly attempt to call up out of itself those forces which one can give the name of the understanding forces for the results of spiritual scientific investigation. And these are forces which are more or less independent upon the physical body. Insofar as we yield ourselves to the senses and what the intellect tells us, that intellect which is bound to the brain in order to bring us understanding, as long as we do that, we are also with this understanding dependent upon our bodily aspect. We have to strengthen the body. We use the body up. We let our activity proceed in the whole sphere out of which also illness comes from. On the other hand, if we transpose ourselves in that understanding, however, with our living understanding, into that which spiritual science offers, so we live and weave in the sphere of healthy forces. Thus, if one wants to understand spiritual science in the same way as you understand the results of ordinary science, if that's what you do, then you do not have the correct relationship to spiritual science. Spiritual science proceeds out of spiritual research, out of the spiritual life of the spiritual researcher, out of a continuous activity, and the understanding which is brought to meet it appeals only to the smallest portion on the tiredness of the physical body. It doesn't appeal to that which causes the tiredness of the physical body. That tiredness of the physical body which is caused as a result of the application of the ordinary powers of knowledge. Hence, through that must also the truth itself be as well for the understander of spiritual science as well as for the researcher of spiritual science. The truth itself must be something like a living being, and that it is also actually. Whereas one otherwise receives the truth with a totality of judgments as something which one merely thinks, one has to receive spiritual science as something which pulsates through the soul as a spiritual blood which inwardly activates and enlivens a soul. One receives the truth as a totality of living spiritual beings. One feels oneself permeated by a living existence through spiritual science if one brings to meet spiritual science the correct sort of understanding. Then, however, it is able to factually work in a healthy way. It can pour health-giving forces right into the physical body. And just as sleep, during the time when the soul is indeed external to the physical body, just as sleep is, in the true sense of the word, a healing medium against many illnesses, so you can call the spiritual science such a healing medium. Now, above all, one must bring attention to the fact that sleep can only equalize that which in physical life has been corrupted or used up. Thus, taken in the main, forces out of the spiritual world can only so far be creative as the borders of the spiritual, as the limits of the spiritual predispositions which the human being brings through birth into existence. It fetches spiritual science, fetches its forces out of that world with which man is connected with in a spiritual way. Hence one can say that sleep is a healing means insofar as it can equalize the used up, worked out forces. Spiritual science leads either through that which she is itself, or through that which she is able to give. She can lead forces to the human being which he does not have already, forces which are not already present in his predispositions. It opens to the human being a much higher source of health than is open to it by the normal life out of the best forces of sleep. And what so of the soul out of, as it were, can radiate to him in a healthy way through a one's livingly finding oneself into spiritual science, one might compare that with what the ordinary ordinary medical art, the medical art can say, insofar as she says that also the ordinary medical art, it can only call into existence those healing forces which are already in the human being, which are suppressed, that what medical science does, it calls up these forces through opposing forces. But on the other hand, spiritual science brings new forces to activity into the human being, forces which have to be developed, which are not predisposed. It appeals not only to the human being who is a microcosm, but it appeals to the human being insofar as the human being as a microcosm is related to the whole spiritual world. Thus, the medical profession really, when it does its healing, it calls upon the human being as a microcosm. And naturally, that's limited by what he has brought into existence with him at birth. However, spiritual science calls upon, not limits itself to that which is in the microcosm, but calls itself to that which can flow out of the macrocosm into the microcosm, because man is a microcosm of the macrocosm. And spiritual science awakens those forces which relate him to the macrocosmic spiritual world. And in order to make it much more perceptible to you, I would like to point to something which already stands at the border of the physical and the spiritual. Now, the person who only a little comes in contact with a human being, he knows how the memory and other forces, as one gets older, begins to diminish, and how much you regret this diminishing of those forces of memory and other forces as you grow older. The forces which we are equipped for our memory are come out of the fond of human life, come out of the foundation of human life, to the extent that we can utilize the forces which enter through birth into existence. And what happens is that gradually you exhaust these forces which you have brought into existence through birth. And one can be externally as healthy as you like. Nevertheless, these forces exhaust themselves. And although through many external means much can be made better, what has been needs to be made better, nevertheless you are actually exhaust the forces with which one has come into birth with. That, however, you will find that when one is inwardly actively takes hold of that which spiritual science can give the human being, and if one acquires quite other habits of thought and Vorstellung than one normally has, so you will notice that those forces which earlier on were memory forces, which as you get older usually decrease, that these memory forces are replaced by something which is a much better memory. There gradually appears out of the spiritual undergrounds of the soul what one can call a looking back upon the events. Just as we otherwise look back upon things in space, so we are able to learn to look back upon the things in time. The forces which otherwise do not develop the memory, because for ordinary people there is a reserve foundation in the direct bodily nature, these remain hidden. This hidden reserve remains hidden. These hidden sleeping powers of memory are brought out of the soul, and they manifest themselves, these hidden sleeping powers of memory, manifest themselves as forces of perception for that which is past. And by a correct living into spiritual science, we can educate ourselves in the course of life to continue something which is continue the ordinary memory. You can develop that further and to something which can livingly grasp the spiritual science, that with what you gather as forces out of spiritual science, that enables you to have much more longer to be equipped with the possibility of surveying the past, and also to receive the ability of fetching up out of the past direction forces for the future. This can happen to an individual who studies spiritual science much more than those who do not enter into it. But actually, you're able to notice, if you study spiritual science long enough and intensive enough, you'll know that your memory becomes something different, something which is a much more truer memory than that memory which is inborn with your physical forces. Now, because we know that a spiritual science can give you healing forces, you will not fall into a sort of fanaticism against external medicine. That would be ridiculous. There are certain illnesses which have to be healed in a physical way and must be healed physically. But there are other illnesses that can receive a reinforcement to their healing through spiritual science. This connection, I have to bring to your attention what we know very well about in the observation of the animal kingdom, that the animals have a certain healing instinct. But as you develop more your attachment to the activity forces bound to the brain of the nerves, bound to the brain and the nervous system, you get the tendency more and more to depart from this healing instinct which the animals have. There are some people that have lost that instinct so completely that whenever they eat, they have a balance in which they weigh everything which they have to eat. Otherwise, they don't know how much to eat. And they reach the point when human beings will not know how to feed themselves, but have to ask other people how they should be fed, what sort of food they could have to eat. Now, in this connection, spiritual science will be able to be for the human being an extraordinarily significant life value, insofar as it strives towards the permeation of a world from which man actually has its origin and a world in which he still is standing. Because, in truth, man in his soul and physical nature has originated out of the spirit. And whereas one, with the part of his being which is bound to the brain and nervous system, distances yourself, removes yourself from life instincts, on the other hand, you get closer to the life instincts through an understanding living into the spiritual science. So that the person who has a living understanding for spiritual science will not have to be subject to a separated abstract knowledge which will prescribe for him, this is what you have to eat, so much must you drink, so much must you walk, so much must you exercise, and so on. But a person who has thoroughly lived into what spiritual science can offer will arrive at the fact that he will have his instincts, he'll have his drives and his impulses so directly spiritualized that he can receive a spiritual good value, which he receives through spiritual science, and this can flow into his drives and desires. And through that, through what spiritual science can make of him, he will know he will have to do this or that in life. One to this can actually say that man has, through the knowledge which is bound to the brain and nervous system, removed, distanced himself from life. But through spiritual science, he can again permeate life with a new content. And through that, he will directly know that this thing is good for you. This is advantageous for you. This thing is not good for you. He will be able to go through life with a security, with a confidence. He will be able to solidly orientate himself in life because he will create a bridge between the deepest foundations of his life and the existence around him. And that will not only stretch itself upon the question of illness and health, but it will stretch itself upon all of his life's activities. And just bear in mind the fact that it is necessary, if we want to be healthy, to appeal to spiritual forces which are active, which rise up in a living direction. When we otherwise judge in life, so it occurs in the way that we make our judgment dependent upon that which we have seen. We remain with our own soul in that connection completely passive. And precisely there is the ordinary science. When ordinary science has to form judgments, she takes pride in the fact that the directing forces, the impelling forces of judgment, are not taken out of your own soul. This bringing to life of the forces of truth, this judgment forces of the soul, which the soul itself has, this bringing to life of these judgment forces of the soul, that is one thing which spiritual science can bring to man as a life value. More and more must the soul which penetrates into spiritual science accustom itself not to merely let its judgments happen, but to judge in an active way, to open up for itself an inner source of judgment. And through that, one can reach what one can call a Geschichtlichkeit, a sort of skill, a dexterity, an aptitude for judgment, an inner freedom to so work with the judgment forces, a presence of mind which springs directly out of the soul when it is called upon to orientate itself with the world or to set itself in conjunction with the world, sich auseinandersetzen, to come to terms with the world. There are so many people today within our materialistic culture who do not know what to do with their thinking and with their life. And they say, now, what shall I do? What can I do? They won't know what to do, but many people today don't know how they stand in life. But this will become less and less when people, more souls, will come into the position of understanding spiritual science. They will feel that they will have in themselves a spiritualized instincts which will give them a sort of joy. Instead of people saying, oh, what's the use of life? When you study spiritual science, you will get spiritualized instincts which will give you sufficient joy to enable you to understand your real place in life. Spiritual science can give the human being an inner elasticity, an inner mobility, a livingness of the capacity of judgment, and through that can only then become that which you could call yourself, an inwardly free human being who can so place himself in life that he himself can take hold of the fundamental source of life, insofar as he knows his soul having a connection with the primal forces of existence. More and more will it be necessary for mankind to develop an inner elasticity, as it were, an inner gymnastic, an inner dance of the powers of judgment, to develop these in a fine inward activity. This will be brought by spiritual science to mankind as a life value, a thinking which has the power to carry in itself the truth that human beings will need according to the future demands of life, which will become more and more complicated. That's what spiritual science can give mankind as a life value. And truly for the reason that one must accustom oneself to develop an intellect which can only be inwardly grasped, because with spiritual science you have bound yourself with an inwardly living truth which doesn't need to come from the outside to give you judgments, but which is animated and enlivened by the living force of truth, just as your own organism is inwardly enlivened by the living force of the blood. And just as the organism is animated by the living force of the blood, and through the same way, and through the blood forces, through the living forces of the blood, can relate itself in a breathing way to the external world, so will spiritual science give man the capacity from the inwardly living truth as something which is through-lived by a soul spiritual heart, that there in the world of the environment it can breathe in the spiritual in order to make the soul so healthy, so capable of being actively strong, that it can relate itself to an inward breathing of air, which makes itself to a free inner organic force, to the force which is in the blood, just as you have the breathing in is related to the breathing in of the physical body, is related to the blood circulation, so through the new spiritual blood circulation of spiritual science, you can get a correct relationship to the breathing in of the spirit. One might say, in the present time, man is not in a position to believe in this possibility of spiritual breathing. However, in the future, one will be possible to believe in the inner heart for spiritual breathing. And through this spiritual breathing, one will be able to develop a human freedom for the soul. Just as that which man as a living being can only be developed through the fact that he not only is able to suck into himself the air in a living way, but he transforms the air livingly and in a fine way develops a separated living organism in a bodily way, so will he be able spiritually more and more to develop inner soul blood, which animates and enlivens him, and that in so far as that which he activates himself, and he can do that, and he can transform external knowledge in such a way as to make the human, through this spiritual breathing, he can transform external knowledge in such a way as only then to make him into a true free being. And when we, all this is in relationship to the cognitive side of the human life. And now when we leave the cognitive side for the moment and turn to the will side of life, then we have to remember that spiritual science brings the human being Vorstellung, concepts, idea, results of spiritual research, which, as it were, live freely in the soul, which live so freely in the soul that they are independent of that soul aspect which comes from the external bodily, which also comes from drives and from external impressions. How does man act normally? Under normal circumstances, how does man normally act? He acts as a result of reacting to external impressions or to external drives. With that which is connected with the external organism, spiritual science has nothing to do. She fills the human being with that which only lives in the organism. It fills the, that which lives in the organism is filled out of the spiritual world. That which doesn't come from the organism itself, but which comes from the spiritual world, it inserts in the organism. Gradually, as you take in spiritual scientific understanding into you, there falls away from you gradually those incitements to act according to external drives and external sensations. But that which comes to you through spiritual science, that provides you with inner forces, which enables you to act out of inner forces and not reacting to external sensations and drives. And this gives a very significant Einschlag for human life. Now, what force is it which can cause you to act if it is not a force coming from the external world? What impulses can then work in you when they don't come from the external world? It will be very easily for you to see that that it must be a much more comprehensive impulse which through that permeates in the soul, and that this soul is permeated by much more comprehensive impulse. And the impulse we're talking about is the impulse of Liebe, of love. That love which streams directly out of the human soul, however, which can only directly stream out of the human soul when it is driven by inner impulses. Spiritual science, the understanding of spiritual science, will give the human being a life value of unlimited value, and all and increasingly freer, and a freer tendency to his action, that which can give the force of his action when there are spiritual impulses, and these spiritual impulses, with that, you can have what's called the force of love. I have in these lectures often mentioned the fact that spiritual science is for life the greatest school for love. Not that spiritual science or every moment talks about love, 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 but it gives life those impulses which produce real love. It is with the human soul very similar to an oven, which you can't have to talk to the oven in order that the oven should make the room warm. The oven will do it itself. You don't need to talk to it, but just put wood in it and light the wood, and then the oven will make you warm. Perhaps someone will say, you don't see that if you look at the wood, then you can't see any warmth in the wood. Nevertheless, it gives you warmth when you put it in the oven and light it. Insofar as we bring something which is entirely different into the oven, we bring, say, the wood doesn't contain warmth. Look at the wood, no warmth in it. Put it in the oven, it produces warmth. Look at spiritual science, concepts of a spiritual science, you can't see love in it. However, if you activate spiritual science, even though you can't see it in it, it produces a love element. Insofar as we accustom ourselves to spiritual scientific concepts, we accustom ourselves to develop a free capacity for judgment, a free capacity for orientating ourselves in the world. Insofar as we, through spiritual science, we are able to fructify our memory, we bring into our soul the impulses of the capacity for love, and we accustom ourselves to it. And so sure it is that warmth arises in a house when the wood is correctly applied, so sure is it that love, really active human love, love which can really help in the world, that is kindled through those impulses which enter into the soul with spiritual science. Spiritual science concepts are the heat material of the soul for love. Now, certainly in this connection, you can have many, many objections. Above all, can be objected that many, according to their viewpoint, that though many of those people who do occupy themselves with spiritual science, you look upon these people and you can't find much love in these people that study spiritual science. However, one must be able to swing up that perhaps that may be the way you judge. Something which to your external observation may appear to be the absence of love, nevertheless, could truly contain love in itself. Many people can do something which they think they're doing out of love. Well, it might be out of egotism. And even what they do out of love might not be produced the correct results in the world. You may want to do love, a love action. You want to help someone else, but perhaps you may not be helping. You may be injuring him. You really don't know. Those with true insight can say that the true, real experience supports the fact that no one who permits himself to be permeated by spiritual science can remain without an influence in relationship to the development of love. Spiritual science will work as a remarkable life value, particularly on the ethical domain, on the domain of helping people and human assistance. Insofar as spiritual science causes a heightening of the moral sense of the moral conscience, this heightening of moral conscience is inserted into every soul which permeates spiritual science. Insofar as that happens, the whole of modern culture will be given a life value when spiritual science finds an understanding into life. If you so consider these things, you will be able to create a concept for yourself of what spiritual science can be for the healthy physical and moral health enlivenment of the human soul, for his becoming free, and for his free configuration of the human soul. Here in this connection, you must realize that people like Ernst Haeckel and Ostwald, his most immediate student, and others, all these are active in their materialistic research. And they are able to develop inner forces. And that which they, in their science, have resulted from their inner working over, you can compare that which is that which is won through spiritual science, insofar as these appeal to the inner soul forces of the human being. However, with those people who, in the coming to existence of such materialistic worldviews, do not stand in a first row, but who take up such knowledge in a passively, that corresponds to that which, as a materialistic world conception, working upon the soul. And when one takes in materialistic ideas, that's differentiated from those who produce these materialistic ideas, which do it with an inactivity of soul. When you take up these materialistic ideas, I take them up passively. And that works upon the human soul as that which works upon the human body by taking up food which is not digested. Whereas the soul needs real food. The body needs real food, and the soul needs real food. You take up materialistic ideas, you can take up passively. But you can't take up spiritual scientific ideas passively. You have to work with them. And so you can say that what happens is that people take up the materialistic world conceptions, and so they corrupt their appetite for spiritual life. But this corruption of the appetite for spiritual life can't go on forever. You can't stifle the hunger of the soul for a spiritual life value. Now, as far as this is concerned, today we're not going to talk about whether spiritualism is true or false. There's no doubt that you can get many kernels of truth there. And many people are trying to satisfy the yearning, the spiritual yearning of the soul for the spirit by giving them what spiritualism produces. But spiritualism is really a materialism. Spiritualism is the son of materialism. Why is that so? Because the appetite of the soul to spiritual life cannot still the hunger. And finally, you come to the fact where physicists or chemists, they lead the external events to human beings, and you take it in without doing anything. In a similar way, people sit down and listen to all these results which are put by these spiritualistic mediums, and they think they're hungering, they're satisfying the hunger of the soul, when they're not. It's much easier and much more comfortable people to sit down in a room and listen to these mediums. That's far more convenient than listening to spiritual science. For spiritual science, you have to strengthen your soul. And so you can say that this spiritualism is an enemy of spiritual science. And the fathers of spiritualism are the philosophers of the materialistic world conception. Spiritual science still finds many enemies. And in the course of this winter lecture, I pointed to the fact that it is natural that it should find such enemies. People come along and say, there's a spiritual researcher, is speaking all sorts of nonsense about the spiritual world, but Kant has already proven that the capacity of the human soul does not extend itself in order to penetrate into the spiritual world. And if this spiritual researcher would just study Kant, he would soon shut up. Certainly it's not correct, it's not possible for the human eye to see the cells in an organism. We know very well the human eye's capacity is limited. That what you need, if you want to see the cells of an organism, you have to have the microscope. In a similar way, you would need a telescope for the star world, because the capacity of the human eye doesn't reach that far. The capacity of the human eye is limited, we know that. But just as in the course of human culture, the eye itself has been reinforced, so are there spiritual methods which enable the human soul to go beyond these so-called Kantian limits and to produce a making increase in power of the soul life in such a way that man can see into the spiritual world. Nevertheless, in spite of all the opponents of spiritual science, doesn't matter how much these opponents may increase in power and in numbers, nevertheless, spiritual science must last. She must conquer. And with the expression of the confidence in the ultimate victory of spiritual science, I now close these winter lectures.